two times a year. The week is done and over with before you know. The world and the weather help fashion a week. The lunatic thoughts politicians will speak. The hindsight that always illumines the press. The sex life of film stars a general mess. The one week the cabinet gets rearranged. The next week April Ashley says nothing has changed. That was the week that was. It's over, let it be. Just let the world swing by. If that's all right with you, then it's all right with me.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. I have with me today both George and Andy, as usual, in their respective homes. Good afternoon, gents.
G'day, Paul.
Hi, guys.
Are we all good?
We're all terrific.
Man. Good. Yep. So have you got over the excitement of Friday evening yet?
I've just peeled myself off the ceiling. We made it. Made it. I've got to say, you know, when you see a poor match and you describe it as watching, as like watching paint dry, Friday night was kind of like listening to paint dry on it. I mean, as a spectacle, it was pretty average at best. But at the end of the day, we went to do a job and we did a job and we got the 3 points, and let's enjoy the 3 points and see what we can do with the remaining six games we've got.
It's looking interesting again, isn't it, George?
Well, yeah, in terms of, I think the commentator said that they've set a target of 5 wins, and that's one of them. So in that sense, yes, it is. The match wasn't, but the situation is more. I was trying to think back to the last time we outplayed somebody and got stuffed with a slutchy goal, which is what happened to Arsenal. I mean, they didn't really outplay us, but they had much more of the ball than we did, much more of the possession. Yeah. And I couldn't think back. And then I thought of the Anfield derby when Origi scored over Pickford's gaff. And although we didn't outplay Liverpool that day, we didn't deserve the result we got. And it's just one of those ironies of football, isn't it? I mean, it was nothing to watch, and we were slutchy as hell. You can't get slutchier than that. And you'll take it. And Pickford, I hope, ended all the arguments about who should be in goal. Although, I also wish to add that I accept your point that you made about 6-9 months ago, Andy, that he needs competition, and he's got competition. He cannot be in a position where he's thinking, he won't drop me. He's bound that he wouldn't play that Olsen bloke, because he would, and he has, and he trusts him. And that save from Pickford at the end was fantastic. The best moment of the match, really, I thought.
In fairness to him, he made 2 or 3 decent saves on Friday night. And
Andy, I thought the best bit was when he was bollocking somebody to go and stand on his near post.
Yes.
That kind of, come on, take this seriously.
Yeah.
Is, you know, we need a good deal more of that all over the pitch.
But that's what we've been saying, isn't it? That he needs to command his own area. And finally, it looks as though that penny has dropped with him, and he is beginning to boss the defenders around in front of him. Because, you know, you've had your doubts about Holgate in recent weeks and months.
But well,
Holgate had a decent game. Maybe his pairing with Godfrey is better than him being paired with Michael Keane. We don't know. But certainly Pickford appeared to be more vocal, appeared to be a whole lot more focused in himself. And I think when the defenders see the goalie who's been described by some as flaky suddenly looking as rock solid as he's ever looked, that gives, you know, that's got to be great for them. You know, they're finally beginning to build the kind of trust in Pickford that we had all those years ago with Big Nev. I mean, you know, nothing like that level yet. But if he's on his way to having that kind of respect and faith from his fellow defenders, then brilliant.
I think it's a hair gel, Andy.
Well, I didn't like saying that, but I knew you'd jump on that being an actor.
Yeah, no, it's the Harry Kane look. He's gone for the Harry Kane look, and it works. The other, there were some individual things on Friday that I thought were important. One is, to be perfectly honest with you, I worried about the health of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. That's the least effective I've ever seen him. No, he did not, Andy. And I'd rather he wasn't played. You know, clearly, Ancelotti does not trust Josh King, but there were certainly times in the second half where I was going, oh, just take him off and put Broadhead on. You know, let's see what this kid can do, because Arsenal are never going to score in a month or so. God, they were poor. I've got one other thing. The most important contribution for my taste, was Allen's. That when we went 1-0 up, he was the most obvious person going, keep going. Keep going forward. Do not sit back and defend this. Which, you know, they could confidently say, well, we can do that. We know what we're doing. You know, we all go, yeah, Crystal Palace, you don't. I thought he was impressive, and I was a bit pleased with his attitude to being 1-0 in front, two safer. Anyway.
Yeah.
We got out of jail free. Thanks very much. Move on next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul, what was your take?
I think on Pickford, actually, I think the coaching team probably have to take a lot of credit. Not just Ancelotti, but the whole team for getting him back into the right mental shape. Because there's no doubt that the Van Dijk incident did affect him, the constant pressure from the press affected him. But he was probably on fairly dodgy ground even before that. Anyway, he just looks far more solid. And I think you're absolutely right. Okay, against a very poor Arsenal side, but he looked commanding, and the defense looked so much better for it. And it was actually Coleman that he was telling off to get onto the near post for that corner, which is quite funny when you think about it, because him being the captain.
But even funnier was that Allen went to mark. It was the smallest person on the pitch.
Yeah,
you say it's funny that he was having a go at the captain, but when it's a corner in your area, the goalie should be the captain.
It's the goalkeeper, absolutely. Yeah,
you know what the goalie's. You know, he's the last line, but if he sets the guys up in front of himself well, he doesn't have to do anything. And I think, you know, I mean, we've all said it before. Why in modern football teams don't put a guy at least one on one of the posts is beyond me. But maybe JP has realised that, and he wants a man on the near post or the back post or whichever. And if he's commanding his box, that's great.
Absolutely.
Good. George, what do you think about your man Gomez?
Are you coming off and getting replaced by Odd Sox? my jury is the same on Gomez. I want him to lose half a stone. And if he can't ever get back the snap he had when he first arrived, then you must not play him as a defensive midfielder. It's ridiculous. Any young kid can run past him, and they can run past Allen too. But watching the two men is an education, because Allen's timing of when he goes for the ball and is going in, and this is now a 50-50 because I'm coming for it, is impeccable. And Gomez is atrocious and usually ends up in fouling people because he's just not a tackler. If he can be released to do what he does best, which is create, if the team can be organised that way, then great. But, you know, have to say this is a purple patch for Sigurdsson too, who, you know, has been a real pleasure to watch. And suddenly, you know, we've got a midfield that's got very good touch, if not much presence. But obviously that will change if and when Decore and Gbadman get back.
Yeah, I mean, we clearly still miss pace in midfield, but... at least at least the players are playing better, which is good.
You know, there's one area of the pitch where you don't need pace, but you do need people who can pass it quickly and directly. You know, you would hope that that would suit our midfield. You know, obviously it's better if everybody you've got has got pace, because pace is what separates people in this game. But
I think it's
I'm
both
very happy to watch.
Sorry, I think it's both physical pace, so i.e. getting from one place to another as quickly as possible, but it's also clearly how quickly you can use the ball.
Absolutely.
Where that's we still look quite slow from that
speed,
point of view.
Speed of thought as well.
Yeah.
And transferring that into execution.
Yeah.
Rodriguez and Sigurdsson can think and pass very, very quickly.
Yeah. No, definitely.
They're hardly likely to win you the ball in a 50-50. In fact, they're hardly likely to go in for it. But having got it, they're pretty solid. It's not often that Sigurdsson misplaces a pass. Not sadly as often as Gomez does.
Mm.
And what about Richarlison?
He had a quiet night, didn't he?
All the better for a goal.
Yeah. He was largely anonymous. I mean, I thought we were better first half than we were second half, but even so, he was largely anonymous. I thought it was laughable that Alan Smith on Sky gave him the man of the match.
Really?
quite honestly, I was that bemused me. Nothing against Richarlison whatsoever, but to give him the man of the match when literally he'd had a couple of shots and then he got the OG from Leno, but dearie me.
I'd have given it to Holder.
I gave it Pickford in the man of the match poll we do on Grand Old Team. I went straight for Pickford because I thought he'd had a solid game and retained his concentration right to the very end. And that's critical.
Who's next? Villa on Saturday.
It is.
Right.
Can we, before we go on to Villa or anything else, can we just bring up Fabian Delph?
Go on then.
For what reason?
Yeah.
I failed to see what he brought to the game. I mean, all right, Gomez wasn't doing a great deal, but in 25, well, never mind the 25 minutes, in 25 seconds, he got himself booked. He had the wrong socks on, which I suppose is neither here nor there, really.
The Sidibe on.
Yeah. Then he got himself booked with his first touch.
Too slow.
He's too slow. Nearly all of his passes were either sideways or backwards, which we're all sick and tired of. And then there was one spectacular fly kick where the ball went up in the air and backwards. And I thought to myself, what has Carlo done here? Why have we brought this guy on? I'm sure he's a nice fella, you know, and I'm sure he's a model professional, blah, 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 blah. But he's done nothing for us, and he did precious little in that game, in that 25 minutes. And in effect, we were down to 10 men.
And you're saying you should have brought Davis on.
Well, if you were going to make that change, if Carlo thought that Andre was either running out of gas or simply wasn't doing anything, then at least bring someone on who's up to the speed of the league, i.e. someone who's used to playing, therefore Tom, rather than bringing on this aging, injury-ridden guy who hasn't done it. I'm sorry, I was not in favour of us signing Fabian Delph in the first place, and I've seen nothing from him in the odd times we have seen him to make me change my mind. And I just thought it was a rather strange substitution, and thankfully it didn't backfire on us.
Not going to argue with that.
But at the end of the day, it's a results business.
Yep.
First time since...
Carlo, Carlo will be sat at home listening to this thinking, what are you talking about, Andy? I got us the 3 points. Fair enough, Carlo. You're the governor. I'm just a fan.
Is it first time since 85, 86? We've won 10 games away from home.
Yeah. We were champions that year.
Yeah. And if you think about our performance in London this year, the Chelsea game aside, we've won every single game.
Yeah. West Ham to come. Woohoo.
Well,
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. Build it up in blue and white.
I was going to say that was that used to be sung on the terraces in the 60s, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Did you start it from the back of the Gladys Street, George?
I remember singing it at Tottenham's match once before Jimmy Greaves buried us with 2 goals.
Jimmy Greaves buried most people with a couple of goals.
When we look, whatever happens between now and the end of the season, and whether we get European football or not, in Carlo's little book, when he talks to Fahad Mashiri at the end of the year, he's going to mention how well we've done away from home. Mm. And it's okay. Everybody's saying, well, everybody's done well away from home because it's been a difficult year because there's no fans. But the fact is that we've done better than most. I think we're fourth or fifth in the away league. Yeah.
Well, we've won more away games than City.
Well, we've won twice as many away from home as we have.
Yeah.
At home, which is, you know, the tragedy at the end of the day.
Mm. Yeah. Transfer some of that form to Goodison and there'd be no question of can we make top four? We'd be in the top four.
Yeah. So we've played 16 games away from home, won 10, drawn 3, lost 3. And if you think about the three that we've lost, Newcastle in particular, we've been there before. We know that's going to look them out. And, you know, we're above Chelsea, we're above Liverpool, we're above Tottenham, we're above Arsenal in the away league. And then if you look at the home league, unfortunately, we're 15th.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's Burnley, Brighton, West Brom, Sheffield United and Fulham below us.
Well, we've got 3 home games left to kind of repair some of that damage. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, Carlo was very clear, wasn't he, about his 5 games, which would make 5 wins, which would make 19 wins as against the predicted 20 at the beginning of the season. But hey, if he does it, fantastic.
That'll do.
You
know, there'll still be an element of if only, what if, but.
There always is. That's what's so great about football.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
You know, we could have lost that match to a strange looking penalty, but we didn't. We got an armpit offside decision from the toy makers. It's,
you've got to love some of these barn pot decisions. Have you seen the West Ham sending off yesterday against Chelsea?
I don't like any of them, Andy, no.
Here's something that might interest you. Nothing to do with Everton per se, but the Premier League issued its annual reports and accounts this week.
And all right.
Buried in that is a figure of £13 million that it's paid for refereeing services this year. So I thought, well, that's interesting, £13 million. So I thought, well, there's 380 games in the Premier League every year. That means that every game costs around about £34,200 to officiate. And I just thought,
right,
referees get about £80,000 a year. So where does the rest of the money go?
To the touch judges, linesmen.
So, okay.
What
do
they get?
So, well, I think they're
there's 4 referees every match, isn't there?
Yeah. So let's say they all earn the same amount of money, around about £80,000 a year. That's £320,000 for the year. So that's what.
Are you saying the rest of this money's gone to VAR?
I'm just interested in how can it possibly cost £34,000 to referee a game?
Well, next time I am asked to referee, I will put my fee in.
Put an extra note on, bro.
No, it's just. Sorry, I mean, there's no answers to this. It's just something I observed, and I thought I would mention it on the podcast.
No, but I think it's interesting. What was the figure for last year, or the before VAR? How much of that money is going to the technology?
That's a good point. Actually, I haven't looked. I will look and
report back.
That should get everybody listening to us next week to find out.
Oh yeah, man! I don't know how I'm going to get through the week.
We may have to do a special once I've looked it up.
Oh.
Right. So I think it's fair to say that Everton's victory at Arsenal, whilst important to us and important to the season, wasn't the biggest news of the week, was it? And we sort of covered it a little bit last week. But it's been like one of the most fascinating weeks of sort of, do we cover football? Well, as fans, we cover football, don't we? It's been one of the most fascinating weeks to be in and around football ever, I think.
Yeah.
For all the wrong reasons, of course. But what do you think about it, George, having watched it from a distance?
Because I was in Leeds up to Friday night or whatever it was. I can't remember now. I had Sky on most nights and, watching it. I must say, my own personal feelings are that there is so much humbug in all this now that it's beginning to make my flesh crawl a bit. And, in terms of flesh crawling, you could always read Bill Kenwright's interview with the Daily Mail. If that doesn't make you flesh crawl, you're not an Evertonian for my money. But anyway, the sanctification of Gary Neville and the raising to a deaconhood of Jamie Carragher is nauseous enough. But here's my big point. Neville was fair play. He got the news live and he reacted, and what he said was 100% true. And he had the balls and the nerve and the courage to go, I've made money out of football. I've made a lot of money out of football. Fair enough. But here's the bottom line for me. What they're really, really talking about is, oh, they're taking our money. Sky and the Premier League, they're taking it away from us. Anybody who tells me, and I've heard nothing but, how great the Premier League has been for football is completely barking mad. The only good thing that has ever happened since the Premier League was formed, there's been two of them. One, Blackburn Rovers won it. Two, Leicester won it. The rest of it has been a procession of money making itself richer. And the level playing field of Nottingham Forest winning the European Cup twice, of Aston Villa winning the European Cup once, has gone. And for those people to be sitting there going, oh, we must have it back, these awful, awful people trying to get even richer than us, has made me sick of listening to them. So I'm happy to be back here where I can't hear it. And, that's my feeling about what I took from the week. And I've got loads of questions about where we all think it's going and the punishment, which absolutely fascinates me. This is a chance for football in this country to level the playing field. And you may bet your bottom dollar they won't do any such thing. But if they relegated all six of them to the bottom of the second division, it would take... I'm trying to work this out, 5 years for all of them to guarantee, more or less, that they would get back into the Premiership. And in that time, every single club in Britain gets two massive paydays because only three of them can be promoted each year. And that would be brilliant. And chuck a wage cap in as well. And you'd be looking at a much more exciting future. Will that be done? No, I don't think so. I don't know. Happy to listen to you guys now.
George, what about this argument that, and loads of fascinating stuff there that we're going to come back to, including your reaction, Andy, in a second. But just want to ask you one question. Henry Winter of The Times says that there shouldn't be a punishment because it's not fair on the fans or the players. or the managers.
Yeah, I know that you don't like using industrial language, but it's hard not to react to that industrially, agriculturally. No, that's not true. It's simply not true because of, as I just said, if you were to take the most extreme punishment and put them at the bottom of everything, every single fan in the country would profit. Never mind what the fans might lose because they didn't stop United being bought out by a bunch of asset stripping, milking people, you know. I don't, he's got a point, of course, but you know, if you don't punish, everything just goes on the same, and that's precisely what they want. Mm. They can't have what they want, surely to God.
Andy, what's, before we get into the, some of the specifics, what's your sort of top-down view of the week that happened?
Well, I mean, like everybody else, I was pretty disgusted by the actions of those six clubs and the six in Europe for trying to form their own league and having the temerity to suggest that they could play alongside continuing in their respective domestic leagues, etc., etc. I mean, you know, it's been, the words arrogance and everything have all been used, you know, endlessly in the last week, and quite rightly so. I take issue with Henry Winter and you can't punish the fan. You can't punish them because it's not fair on the fans and the players and the managers. Well, it wasn't fair on the fans and the players and managers of all the other clubs who've ever been legislated against for whatever reason and had 12 points deductions and huge fines and things like that. You know, the fans of Portsmouth and Bury and every other club that had points deducted and whatnot, it wasn't the fans' fault, wasn't the players' fault. It was mismanagement at the top of the club. But it didn't stop the authorities taking 12 points or whatever off those clubs. And, you know, putting my bitter Evertonian cap on, I refer back to the ban that us and Norwich suffered from when we all got banned from Europe for 5 years. That sure as shit was nothing to do with the fans and the players of Everton Football Club and Norwich and the other teams that qualified for Europe that year and weren't allowed to go and play in Europe for a further 5 years. So whilst, you know, I guess if I was a United fan or a City fan or a Liverpool fan or whatever, you know, I wouldn't want my team to be relegated or have points deducted or what have you. But the point of the matter is that in the course of footballing history, that is what has happened to people who've broken rules or been poorly managed and poorly run. They've been relegated or they've had points deductions. So you can't have one set of rules for the Berries and Portsmouths of this world and another set of rules for the six clubs who think they're bigger than the rest. You know, there has to be some level of punishment somehow. I'm not quite sure how it will be done, but if put it like this, if there's no punishment, I think there's going to be an awful lot of people who will lose faith in football if there is nothing done. Because if nothing's done, then they'll only come back again in the future and try it again.
Well, they will try it again, Andy. That, you know, the Champions League format is now an even bigger mess than it was.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. This coefficient of teams being able to qualify on their previous history. I'm sorry, that is an utter nonsense. And I mean, it's a Champions League, and most of the teams who compete in it every year have not been champions. You know, Tottenham got to the final, they haven't won a championship since 60-61, for crying out loud sake. Sorry, Spurs, but you shouldn't have been in the Champions League. You've not been champions. It should be a Champions League. Like the European Cup Winners' Cup was a competition for the teams that won the cup in their respective countries. The UEFA, you know, the Intercities Fairs Cup as was that became, you know, that is now in effect the Europa League. That was for the teams who finished second, third, fourth, or whatever. So why can't we go back to that? Why can't we have a true Champions League of the however many clubs, however many countries are in UEFA, all put their champions in and that's it? And re-establish the Cup Winners' Cup and have the UEFA Cup, in what was the Intercities Fairs Cup. You know, come on. You know, a Champions League where 70% of the clubs have never lifted a trophy in their life is a joke.
Well, I suppose this has been coming, hasn't it, for a long time? Because over the years, you know, there's a gradual creep, isn't there? And you keep getting away with things, then it emboldens you to do more, and that's effectively what we've seen. I just think it's possibly it's one of the worst conceived ideas ever, and then it's possibly even more poorly executed. It seems incredible to me that people of the undoubted intelligence of some of the people that were involved fell for this, or didn't use the necessary discipline to say, this doesn't quite smell right, but I need to do it, because if all my competitors do it and I don't do it, then I'm the one that's left out. It just defies belief for me that everybody fell for that trick, and that, you know, it's been driven by a small number of people. Perez, certainly, Barcelona almost certainly are the big drivers. United and Liverpool, the big drivers in the Premier League, for slightly different reasons, but ultimately it's a power and money grab. Mm. And these people have got no interest at all in being custodians of the game. It's, as we said last week, purely an investment for them, and then just trying to maximise the investment return. And if they need to destroy the game as it is in order to do so, let nobody be in any doubt after what happened last week. They will do so. And if they're not punished sufficiently to act as a deterrent for them to do it again, they will do it again, and they will keep trying to do it until they succeed. And the really bad thing about that is not only if they succeed, but they will destroy the game by just chipping away at it anyway, because people like us, ordinary people watching the game, people who sponsor the game, people who have partnerships in the game, people who put money into the game, will just say, you know what, I don't really want to be associated with something like this. And that's the big danger, that they, not only will they go off and do something else, but actually what the game becomes so morally bankrupt. And I think we're close to that point.
I agree with that.
Actually, decent people will no longer want to be associated with it. Yes, we all love watching a game of football, and that's fine as fans. You will take almost anything, any crap that's thrown at you, just to continue watching your team play on a pitch. But for partners, investors, and people who've got a commercial interest in the game, they won't, because they'll just find something else to invest their money or spend their time on.
So if we assume, therefore, that the major sponsors of these 12 clubs had it gone ahead, would the 12 major sponsors, for instance, Standard Chartered with Liverpool and Chevrolet with Man U, have walked away from those deals and said, no, this is not why we sponsored you. We didn't sponsor you to go and form your own private league. We sponsored you because you were part of the Premier League and La Liga and whatever.
I think what they'll say is, so if I was on the board of Standard Chartered, I would turn around to Liverpool and say, we pay you whatever it is, 35, 40 million pound a year to have our name on the shirt front. Some of that is because you're in the Premier League, but a lot of it is because you're in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. Your actions of the in the last week, however long it's taken to get to this point, tell me as a sponsor that you don't actually value the competition that we're paying to be part of. If you did value it, you wouldn't be wanting to destroy it and create something else. Now, if you want to create...
Yeah, but Paul...
Go on.
Well, I've got a follow-on, Arkin. Just give me a minute, because it just made me think that, okay, whether they're punished or not this time, and as I've said, I think they should be, but I'm not quite sure what the right way of doing it is. And in the future, somehow they come back with another idea to form a European Super League along similar lines, but obviously they'll word it differently and you'd think they'd be a bit cuter about how they present it. Why don't the rest of us just turn around and say, okay, go and form your own Mickey Mouse League. Okay, if you can find yourself a TV deal, fine, but the chances are you're going to lose your sponsors because they didn't sponsor you to be in your own league or whatever. And let football reform itself without them. If Liverpool, United, City, Arsenal, Chelsea and Tottenham want to go and play in a private, closed league, as was mooted, let them go. Wash our hands of them. Say goodbye, sayonara, sail off into the distance. We don't want to know, because the rest of us will just get on and play football without being sullied by you lot. Why couldn't that happen? I know there'd be, you know, TV deals and sponsorship deals would all have to be renegotiated or whatnot, but it would be the opportunity for those deals to be played out even fairer across the football spectrum, because we've got 92 clubs in the four divisions. We'd lose 12, we'd lose six. You know, that leaves 86. Surely somebody could negotiate the sponsorship and TV deals to give us a better opportunity for the money that is generated to be spread around 86 clubs than amongst what six of them want, where they get the lion's share of the cake.
Okay, Andy, clearly that is one way of doing it. I suppose the argument would be whether or not they could generate the same amount of revenue without the six, and whether European football in particular could generate the same amount of revenue without 12 or 15 or 20 of the top sides. What attraction would the Champions League have as against this other private league that may or may not happen? And then I suppose you've got to look at specific cases. So in the case, for example, with Everton, will Farhad Moshiri want to fund the stadium if potentially the amount of income that we're going to generate is less because these six clubs have disappeared?
But I think, Paul, I mean, maybe I'm in cloud cuckoo land. And if I am, I'll accept people saying that. But part of me says that if the six English clubs who tried it this time tried again with the same six clubs in Europe, from Italy and Spain, three each, and we all said, right, okay, go and form your own league. We don't want you anymore. You know, it was nice having you here, but we can't be doing with your greed. So go on your own. Go and do your own deal, etc. It would obviously be painful from a revenue perspective, certainly for one, maybe 2 years. But then as things settle down and the match going public in this country got behind their teams possibly even more because they possibly see it as a more level playing field. You know, I think the TV companies and the sponsors would come back. Yes, you know, it would be nice to still have Man United and Man City and whatnot, because they are big clubs and they've got big followings, et cetera, et cetera. But not having a gun held to our head by them. No, I just think part of me says, if they come back again and try this move, let them go. You know, we'll take the hit for a couple of years. We'll take the pain, but we will survive. We will come through it. And the game as a whole could be better because the authorities, the clubs could strike the deals. They might not be as big, but if they were better shared out, then football as a whole could benefit as against six clubs trying to hold the rest of us to ransom. That's how I look at it, rightly or wrongly.
No, I think it's a fair point. And you know, clearly from a moral point of view, you're absolutely right. And as we said earlier, this constant desire to either have their own thing or to do their own thing or to have more money, etc., more power, more influence, ends up destroying the game if it's not held in check. So if it can't be held in check, then I think your response is absolutely right that they just no longer participate in the game, or at least in the authorised game. They can go and do what Kerry Packer did with cricket in the 1970s. But I think the first duty is to try and find a way that. And I don't say this from a position of weakness. I say this from a position of strength. The first duty is to find a way of keeping them in the game.
Yes. Sorry, Paul, that was George. He's lost his internet, so we'll just have to continue. I beg your pardon. He was on the landline then.
Okay, don't worry.
So I missed the last. A couple of minutes of you then.
All right. No, just all I was saying was that the first duty of the game is to find a way that doesn't accommodate in a sense of giving them everything that they want, but keeps them in the game. And I think the way of doing that is making the regulations within the game much stronger than they currently are, so that these people can't do the types of things that they're trying to do. There's a really interesting argument that says, actually, if they go and do the Super League and they're not involved in the Premier League, they're not involved in the Champions League, they're not going to earn the same amount of revenue that they would do from where they are currently. So they could actually lose money by doing that. And I think ultimately that's what would stop them from doing it if they weren't in the Premier League. Because I can't see how one closed tournament can earn as much money as the Premier League and Champions League combined. I just don't see how that works. And a lot of people I've spoken to this week agree on that point. So the question is how do you keep them in the game, not holding the game to ransom, but also making the game much fairer. And this is where I get back to my, so this is an opportunity to reboot the game, to have governance structures that make sure that these people can't do the types of things that they've been proposing or they might want to propose again in the future. And that involves around having fans involved in the game. It involves in having independent directors. My view is that they sit on an advisory board and that board gets involved in what the club wants to do in terms of ownership. So if they want to change the owner, if they want to change control, that board would get involved in that so that they would have a power of veto over somebody that they didn't think was suitable to take over the club. But they also have a power of veto over like the setting up of a new competition. Mm. So they would have very specific responsibilities and very specific power. So they wouldn't necessarily be able to stop, let's say the advisory board didn't think building a stadium at Bramley Moor was a good idea. They wouldn't have the power to stop that because, you know, that's in a sense an economic stroke commercial decision. That should still sit, I think.
But they'd be able to veto Pol Pot taking over Everton.
Correct. Yeah. Whether you could get to the point where the advisory board or whether the fan representatives can influence some of the stuff that the club does, for example, in the community. You know, Everton obviously is an example of that, but other clubs don't do as much. Is an interesting point, but that's really not core to what we're talking about here, is it? No. What we're talking about is creating a structure that either satisfies the Glazers or satisfies FSG, stops them from doing what they wanted to do, which is totally unfair. And if it doesn't satisfy them, it gives them the opportunity to sell their business to somebody else. Because at the end of the day, if you don't like the business that you're in, for whatever reason, if you don't like the environment that you're in, you don't like the fact that the organization, the Champions League or UEFA or the Premier League are stopping you from doing things you want to do, you have a choice as an owner. Sell the business to somebody else who's satisfied with the conditions that sit around the business.
Yeah.
Don't try and destroy the game for everybody just to satisfy your own requirements. And that's what they've done here. They've taken the view that the game is not satisfactory for them because of their greed. They want a bigger slice of whatever revenues are available. And instead of working the business to a point where they get that, they've just decided we're going to destroy the whole thing. Mm. And that's ultimately why they need to be punished, which is probably the area that we need to get onto now. This idea that they shouldn't be punished is just complete and utter nonsense.
Well, exactly, because, you know, as I said earlier, all those other clubs who've fallen foul for whatever reason have had points deductions, etc., etc. And, you know, Henry Winter's a respected journalist, but for him to say no punishment, you know, because it's not fair on the fans of the players, it's not been fair on the fans of the players of any team. So, unfortunately, you know, there has to be some punishment. Quite, you know, to what I said before, and it's the big question from George, who unfortunately we've lost. But what form is any punishment likely to take? That's the real grey area.
Well, I thought Everton was. Let's answer it this way first, Andy. I thought Everton were very good at the beginning of the week. They were very bold and very strong, saying all the right things about what had happened and saying all the right things about that had to be suitable punishment. Mm-hmm. It seems to, and that set the scene for the meeting on Monday. And we were great at that. We really did a fantastic job in getting to that point. It seems to me that having got to that point, now there's a gradual we're stepping back. When I say we, I mean the 14 clubs collectively. And, you know, the media certainly, because they have the current media participants, they have a vested interest in keeping stuff exactly as it is because it's highly profitable to them. And obviously the six clubs themselves have a vested interest in this. It just seems that now that the initial sort of shock has gone past, that the 14 clubs are being satisfied with not doing what they should do, which is actually addressing all of these issues for once and for all, and making sure, first of all, that the punishment fits the crime. And, you know, this is criminal in the context of the future of football and the effect that it has on the other 14 clubs and everybody else below them. It has to be a very strong punishment. My view is that they have to be relegated to the Championship, and then they can fight their way back, and all the benefits that that brings both to the Championship and to the Premier League, mm-hmm. Because it makes it'll put more money into the championship, which is good. It will redistribute revenues across the Premier League, and it will also allow for the glass ceiling to be taken off. So the six occupants at the top of the table will be different from what they normally would be in any normal season, right, at least for 2 or 3 years.
My only fear with that, Paul, is that were the decision to be that the six clubs were relegated, I completely agree that, you know, that in the time it took them, assuming that they were able to bounce back in two or three years, because they've already got strong enough squads, etc., they probably would be able to get back in all six of them inside 3 years. And the you know, they them being in a lower division would probably almost certainly help all those other clubs in the Championship with bigger gates for those six games and a better TV deal and etc. The thing I wouldn't want is for those six clubs who have transgressed, they broke Premier League rules by looking to form their own league and their own competition outside of the Premier League rules that they'd all signed up to, for them then to be lauded as the saviours, in inverted commas, of the Championship and the big benefactors, you know, the smaller clubs would in effect be, you know, would have to be grateful to them for having been kicked down to their level and then bringing the riches back to that level of the game. That would not sit well, that people who've transgressed would then be seen as the saviour. I
get what you say, because there's a lot of people, for example, in Scottish football that think, you know, what happened to Rangers was, first of all, good for Scottish football.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're grateful for the benefit of having Rangers in their division for, you know, the period of time that they were there, normally one season as they got promoted. In a sense, that's almost inevitable, though, isn't it? How do you not achieve that? The fact is that each of these six clubs, by virtue of being forcibly relegated, go into the Championship with a massive reputational cloud hanging over them. And I think it would then be incumbent on everybody to remind everybody that the reason why they're there, they're not there to benefit the Championship.
Yeah, they're there as a punishment.
They're there as a punishment. And they're there as a punishment because what they tried to do was to destroy the Premier League as it is. Now, we know that the Premier League as it is not perfect and there has to be lots and lots of changes, which this is now going to, I hope, accelerate. But if you did that, you'd be under no pretense at all that this wasn't anything other than, you know, a very firm punishment. And if you then make all the governance changes that you'd want to make, it would stop them from ever being able to do it again. And if the owners didn't like it, well, the owners, as I said earlier, can do what they can do with any other business that they don't like. They can sell it to somebody else because there's a list of people who will buy Manchester United, Liverpool, Tottenham, Arsenal. Well, maybe not Arsenal. No, I mean, in all seriousness, there is a list of wealthy investors, institutional investors, private equity groups. Not that you'd necessarily want to be bought by one of them, but nevertheless, there are people out there that would buy these somewhat damaged but still premium assets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, it needs somebody in the Premier League, somebody in UEFA. Because this is not just an English problem. It's obviously a problem across Europe. To say that to these people, if you're not satisfied with what we do, what our tournaments do, what our competitions do, the way that money's distributed, the rules around financial fair play, if you're not satisfied with it, that's fine, because we're not changing. If we make changes, we're only going to make changes for the better. And if it's regulatory, it means that regulations are going to be tougher in the future, not less. So if you like it, good. And you're welcome to be part of it in the future, having taken your penalty for the actions that you did. But if you don't like it, sell your business, because we're no longer pandering to your requirements. If you want to be part of the Premier League, if you want to be part of UEFA, if you want to be part of the Champions League, these are the rules. These are the conditions. You take it or you leave it, pal. It's up to you.
Agree. I'll go with that. You've sold me on that. Relegate them.
Yeah. But whatever the punishment is, because ultimately I don't think the 14 have got the balls to do it. Pardon the expression. I don't think they've got the courage to do it.
Yeah.
But the argument, whatever the punishment is, the argument that you either accept the rules as they are, and you accept the conditions of being part of the Premier League, the fact that you have to act in good faith with us as members of the Premier League, as members of UEFA, etc. You either accept that and you do it, or you sell your own, or you sell your business.
Yeah.
And let's no mistake here. If you ever did anything like this again, if it was possible for you to do anything like this again, because hopefully with the rule changes, it wouldn't be possible. But if it was possible for you to do it, then you're out. You just kicked out. That's it. Your licenses have gone, and then you've got a much bigger problem on your hands.
Yeah.
Because you own a business that used to be worth several billion dollars, and now it can't play football anywhere. Mm-hmm. So that's your problem, pal. But you're welcome to stay as long as you accept the new rules and the fact that the new rules are tougher. And if you don't like it, well, I'm going to say it's been nice knowing you, because it probably hasn't.
Mm.
But there's the door. Sell your business and let somebody else run these fantastic assets, because all of them are fantastic assets in terms of, what they mean to us societally and everything else. Liverpool means as much to Liverpool supporters as Everton does to us.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So they've got this custodian responsibility. If they don't want to take on those responsibilities, if they don't want to abide by the rules, sell your business.
Yeah.
Just get out. That's what happens around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You're invested in a particular sector, and then there's a change in that sector. And as an investor, as an owner, you decide you no longer want to be part of it. Then you sell the business to somebody else. And football clubs should be no different from that.
Good speech.
Sorry, got on my soapbox there.
No. Paul, you've enunciated it well. You've put it a lot clearer than I put mine. Maybe I was a bit excited about it, but I just hope that whenever a decision is made, and I guess it's not going to be made quickly as to whether there will be punishment and what it will be. I suppose the sensible thing is for everybody to have a really, really long, hard think about it. And maybe even wait till the summer before the decision is finally made and announced, communicated to the world at large. If something had been done, inside 24 hours by Wednesday, then it probably would have been extremely hasty and probably completely not thought through properly. So I guess we've got, 4 or 5 weeks left of the season. If it takes that long for the 14 clubs and whoever else is going to be involved to sit around a table or sit around a Zoom conference and thrash it out, then so be it. But I am of the opinion that there has to be something. And if it's along the lines that you've expressed, fine, I'll go with that.
Yeah, I can't see any other way of dealing with it. I think it does have to be dealt with pretty quickly, because you can't really have situation where whatever the punishment is, drifting into next season.
No, no, I meant you know, if it takes to the end of the current season.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure.
And maybe another week, then fine. But no, it can't. Like you say, we can't get to the start of next season with nothing, with no decision having been made and taken. That would be ridiculous.
The problem, of course, is that they will, any of the clubs that receive a punishment will almost certainly want to then take that to arbitration. They'll then want to take it to CAS, which would, right, you know, would take time. But you know, we had the situation last year, didn't we, with Manchester City, mm-hmm, in terms of FFP. That was resolved very quickly because there was a need for it to be resolved before the start of the new season. So there's no reason why it couldn't be done again. And actually, thinking about it, if it meant a disruption to the next season, this is so important that it has to be, even if it caused a slight disruption, you know, it may be a delay in the start of next season. Right. I think it's probably worth doing because this is so important to sort out. What can't happen is that we just continue as if, you know, as this never really happened.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know it's not a massive concern, but do we assume similar conversations to what we're having are going on in Italy and Spain as well?
Well, I doubt it in Spain. Certainly in Italy, because, you know, the other clubs will be looking at the two Milan clubs and be looking at Juve in the same way that we're looking at the six here.
Right.
I think Atletico Madrid is a slightly different one, but certainly the way that Real Madrid and Barcelona dominate Spanish football, you know, it's difficult to see how where the power base comes from to make material changes to that relationship between Spanish football and those two clubs.
Right.
They're in such a dominant position, which of course is what you don't want to happen here, and which is what they were trying to do here.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
I mean, it shouldn't be fascinating and it shouldn't be happening, but it is actually fascinating.
It's certainly fascinating. for sure.
Yeah. The question, I think the question, you know, given this is an Everton podcast, the question is, you know, what do Everton now do about it? And I think we got to the front of the pack on Monday, certainly with the announcements with Fahad Mashiri being on national radio and stuff.
Yeah.
And I would hate us to lose that advantage that we gain, not necessarily advantage that we just gain just for our own purposes, but for the game as a whole.
Yeah.
But then that takes you back to, you know, are the people that are running the club, are they suitably qualified? Are they suitably experienced to really take on board the leadership opportunity that's in front of them? Don't really want to get into that one today, but I think it's a question for the future. Mm. They're going to have to. All clubs are going to have to account for themselves back to their own fans and back to their shareholders as to how they respond to this situation. So there's actually a huge amount of pressure on Bill, on Denise, on even on Fahad Mashiri to come up with appropriate solutions to this.
Yeah, having been the standard bearer on Tuesday, you know, they need to stay front and centre, don't they?
Yeah, because, you know, it's like if the words are nice and then the actions are somewhat less than what was expected, you put yourself in a worse position than you were previously.
Yeah.
Because you haven't delivered.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, seeing as George is not with us, I think he just went off and fancied a glass of red wine or something. I don't know. No, sorry, George. I know you'll listen to this. That's unfair of me to say that. It was the internet. Should we leave it there, Andy? And we can obviously pick it up again next week.
Yeah.
After the Villa game, and all that's going to happen this week, we can talk about it then.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Obviously, because you know, with, I mean, we've still got Villa at Villa Park, the date yet to be advised.
Yeah.
So next Saturday, 8 o'clock, we face Villa at Goodison. You know, fingers crossed, we can make that another of the five wins that we've said we need. And yeah, we can reconvene next Sunday and we can discuss that and the rest of the fixtures. And of course, the topic we've not got to today, and which, as you rightly said, with George having dropped out, unfortunately, because of his internet, you know, let's then look at the news we got this week that Marcel Brands is here for another 3 years. And what that could entail for him, as he said when he first joined the club, he doesn't expect to turn things around quickly. Well, now he's into his second tenure, so let's discuss and conject over what exactly he'll be looking to do, not only in the summer, but in the next 3 years.
Yeah, a lot of which, though, is going to be shaped by whatever happens between now and the end of the season.
Exactly.
Both in terms of our ability to qualify for European competition, but obviously, you know, all the stuff that's going on with the Super League and everything else. All right. Shame that George couldn't stay with us, but George, no doubt, will be back next week, and we can continue the conversation. So, Andy, thanks very much. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for your views. Really enjoyed your views. And of course, as always, thanks to everybody for listening. And please, you know, keep safe, and we'll speak to you soon.